Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
How are you?
Doing very well.
It's good.
Still kind of got the World Cup in me, feeling the good vibes. But tonight it ends.
Yeah. I think that what we're doing is right. This is a cleanse. This is like breaking up with a boyfriend. We're going to burn all his clothes in a... Oh, that's an episode of Friends.
It's our World Cup retrospective where we pay the tournament the honor that it's due.
Not a Devundlings.
No, you seem to scoff at that.
So I think this is better.
More dignified.
Right.
And the Devundlings is kind of more like the MTV Video Music Awards. This deserves better.
Right.
We're going to look back on the last month and truly just how fun, interesting, surprising, just all of it. We've got a bunch of different, I guess, superlatives that we'll kind of go through here. I do have one final trivia for you, which I could be wrong. Maybe people have been quietly mocking it, but from what I've seen on Twitter, people actually truly did enjoy it. So hopefully, I did put a spin on it tonight, though.
Oh,
it's a little bit different.
What's your spin?
Well, there's a few more, but it's also the questions are laid out in a much different way. I'll explain when we get there.
What, Arabic?
I didn't say a different language.
Well, how could it be in a different way? What are you talking about?
Don't worry about it.
This is just to because I say things like, I adore to read, and I try to flaunt.
How you think that you're better than me and more brilliant than all of our listeners.
No.
You put yourself on a pedestal,
no, I just think,
and I think it's important for there to be a built-in segment on this show
that,
where you're humanized.
Right, exactly. Takes me down a peg or two.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm better than our listeners. I think I'm better than you.
Well, let's get right to it now. Oh, but actually, before we do, I should say that we've kind of gone back to our normal format. So for all whatever new listeners we may have acquired during the last, I make it sound so
CD
robotic
and yeah,
just like an inhuman. Yeah, to all of the new,
we've purchased new listeners, and you should know the rundown and how we do things.
I've been
people who've enjoyed what we've done over the course of the last few months.
Yeah,
why couldn't you just say that acquired?
I don't know. I have a problem.
So I'm just clinical.
I know. You're right. All right, let's try that again from the top. We have a lot of new listeners from over the last few weeks, which is awesome. So I guess for all of you who are new, during the course of like a normal season, we put out two podcasts a week. Typically, they're recorded on the same night. Sometimes that varies depending on the Champions League and things like that. And you can kind of listen to them as at your leisure.
Yeah, much to the chagrin of a lot of people who wish we do multiple,
yeah,
much, much more, but that's a story for another day.
That's right. So that's what we've got going on. We've got this podcast out based, giving the World Cup its props, and then we've got another one out there, a Wheel of Football special. So make sure you check that out, where we kind of hit some of the other issues that have gone on that really haven't been touched upon during this tournament.
A few things we've missed.
Yeah. You ready?
Yeah, let's do
this. For a nice look back, I thought we'd start with something that we've kind of danced around for weeks now and really come in with a bang here, and that is our goal of the tournament. Would you like to go first?
Yes, I would. I've gone for Kevin De Bruyne's goal against Brazil. This is just a mixture of everything. It's the powerful, skillful running of Lukaku, a perfectly timed pass that targeted the weak side of the Brazilian defence, and a really, really good finish from just inside the box, the edge of the box, whatever way you want to look at it. And the strike, slow motion technology does this great, great justice as we see the strike from behind Kevin De Bruyne. An absolute, I don't know, a laser beam to the bottom corner of the net.
Here's Lukaku now. Like a tank. He's done well. De Bruyne. De Bruyne, 2-0! What is going on here?
Ian Dark on FIFA TV there.
Yeah, what is going on here was just a lovely little line, I thought.
Well,
what's going on, Ian, is
Brazil are going out of the tournament.
Bobby Martinez is outsmarting his opponent in Chiche.
Yeah. That was kind of peak Belgium.
Yeah, and I have consistently said they were the team that I enjoyed watching the most at the tournament in terms of their attacking flair. So I wasn't going to deviate from that, and I thought I'd pick my favourite Belgium goal.
Love it. Let's see, the goal that I went with, I've mentioned this, but I guess we'll make it official here. From the France-Argentina round of 16 match, France were trailing 2-1 after two Argentinian goals in relatively close proximity. You started to wonder, ooh, maybe Messi and this Argentina team are starting to rise, but it was all brought to a screeching halt when this occurred.
Played it across. It's settled. Fired. Tied.
Oh, my gosh.
Two.
Oh, my.
Pavard. First international goal.
Oh, in the 57th minute, Benjamin Pavard for France, kind of stepping in almost as a tournament-long substitute at the fullback position. Scores, like you heard JP Delacamera say there on Fox Sports, his first international goal. It was beautiful in real time, but I think it was enhanced greatly by the slow motion instant replay. Like you said with De Bruyne, I was close to going with Nacho's goal. I was also considering Musa for his goal for Nigeria early in the tournament.
But the spin on Pavard's shot.
It's mesmerizing. It was such a cool goal, and the fact that it was in such a crucial moment as well, to tie that up. Then, of course, Mbappe got two in a four-minute span. Aguero pulled one back late, but Pavard was—I thought it was just brilliant.
And if you listen to the commentary, and it's no slight on JP or Tony, but they weren't even sure what they were watching.
Well, Tony Meola just like completely lost sight of himself.
Yeah,
which some people hate that. I've never asked you about that in broadcasting, like when the color commentator stomps all over the play-by-play announcer. There's a lot of play-by-play guys that when that happens, they're horrified by it. I'll tell you, myself, I don't necessarily mind because I sort of like it's almost like validation that this was such an incredible moment that like people can't even contain themselves. They just have to blurt out whatever they're thinking. So I kind of feel like in some ways it almost adds to the moment.
It does. And as long as it's not contrived.
Right. And I don't think this was.
No, what's the problem? There is no problem. It's like Gary Neville was really feeling that goal. And he stomped all over the other Sky commentator. And we're fine with it. It's a classic moment.
Yeah.
Look, like I said, as long as it's not contrived, I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah. So Benjamin Pavard gets my goal of the tournament. Kevin De Bruyne gets yours. We move on now to the player of the tournament. If you're okay with it, I'm going to go first.
I will allow it.
I went completely unoriginal in every way, shape, or form. I went with the Golden Ball winner because I believe that the Golden Ball winner is the player of the tournament. Very clinical, as you said. Luka Modric, no player covered as much ground. He was top 10 in key passes per game. He passed at an 87% success rate, which is pretty impressive when you see that he averaged 69 passes per match. Against Russia, JJ, he was 89 for 102 in completed passes in that match. And I'm starting to wonder about something, and this is kind of taking us down a different road. We've gotten so used to Messi versus Ronaldo for Ballon d'Or. Luka Modric may have been Real Madrid's best player.
Right.
They won the Champions League. And now in the World Cup, he was undoubtedly Croatia's best player, and it was determined that he was the best player of this tournament. So in the two most prestigious soccer events of the year, the Champions League and the World Cup, there was arguably no better player than Luka Modric. I feel like that is a massive feather in his cap when we're starting to talk about Ballon d'Or candidates.
Fine. I'm not even thinking about the Ballon d'Or yet. But you're right. Over those two tournaments, there's no question.
Did you know in the Champions League final, he had a 100% tackle rate?
Yeah. I do think that was an underrated part of his game. I think we don't think of him in that role. And also, it didn't matter almost that Brozovic played in that kind of holding role, and for most of the tournament it was Rakitic and Modric there, so they actually had to do some of the dirty work. Well, Rakitic does it anyway, but you don't normally associate it with Modric. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, he was sensational in this tournament.
How tired is he now, though?
It's a good question.
I would say exhausted.
I wonder how that will manifest itself once because club season rolls around.
You feel like it's going to manifest itself in some way because he's in his early 30s.
Yeah.
He needs a rest, for sure.
And he'll obviously get that now, but this is all going to start up again really soon.
Yeah.
Like, much sooner than you think.
It is fair to say, though, that he will not occupy that same kind of role at Real Madrid. There will be other people, Casemiro, Cruz, who will do a little bit of that for him.
Of course. Who do you have for your player of the tournament?
My player of the tournament, hands down for me. I tried thinking of other people because, you know, I've been such a Belgian-phile or Belgian-ophile.
Yeah, that's a word.
Yeah, that I just made up. Yeah. Eden Hazard. Mm-hmm. Hazard was directly involved in 7 goals at the World Cup. So that's 3 goals, 4 assists. The joint best of any Belgian player since the great 86 team, Jan Koolemans, also had 7. But it's even more than that. That's almost not including their third place playoff game. That's half their goals. There was a stat that came out of the Brazil game, which will go down as Belgium's most complete performance, I'm sure. Eden Hazard completed all 10 take-ons he attempted versus Brazil, a record at this World Cup for most take-ons completed in a single game.
That's incredible.
10 times he took a player on, 10 times he completed and went past them. Against Brazil, a Brazil team that was noted for both its offense but mostly for its defense in this tournament. Hazard's 10 take-ons were the most by a player with a 100% success rate in a single World Cup since 1966. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And if you look how important he was at the end of that game, keeping the ball, getting fouled, he had a fabulous tournament. He took his goals against Panama very, very well. He was crucial in the comeback against Japan. I couldn't think of anyone else I enjoyed more watching. And I still say it, if they could have kept getting the ball to Hazard wide against Pavard in that semi-final game, things could have been different for Belgium.
And you wonder if our two players of the tournament may be teammates in due time.
Well, the noises are that Hazard has given his all for Chelsea and wants to move on and said, and you know who I want to move on to. So that's a very limited number of clubs.
Yeah, it certainly is. Favorite moment of the tournament? You want to go first?
Yeah, and I know it was early, so it kind of shapes the way you look at the tournament, the early excitement. But in a game that had everything, was back and forth, had great goals, the Nacho goal, and that Portugal went ahead and suddenly the initiative was wrested away from them. This was brilliant to think that they could finish right at the death with a free kick from an awkward angle to equalise. Cristiano Ronaldo.
Ronaldo through!
Yeah, it was just such great drama. Like you said, the back and forth nature, but also the fact that it was him. Like, Fox had that long shot leading up to it of him just
adjusting his shorts.
And which is another thing, but just in like the deepest focus, like the tension just built so perfectly. And then for him to complete it in the way that he did, it was that is certainly a legitimate favorite moment. There's
again,
no question.
I don't want to pepper this with praise because we've talked about this moment so much. I don't want to go overboard, but how about that for being clutch? That's just unbelievable. And it's almost from the minute it left his boot, he knew it was going in.
Yeah. My favorite moment, JJ, if you thought you were going to escape this podcast without one final English Andy appearance, you were just so sorely mistaken.
He's always lurking under the surface.
I went with this from England and Colombia. The final penalty, Eric Dier, Fox on the call.
Dier, can he make a count? Yes!
This was the moment that football came home, JJ.
Oh, it was the moment that Spurs could hoist yet another.
That's not what this is about. This is English.
Another achievement for Spurs.
Now, here's the thing. I really enjoyed it just because of the script that this was seeming to follow and the diversion that it took. You know, England in the first two games, everybody is all excited and on board. And I was just amazed with the reaction to the Belgium loss, how quickly it all turned. And you and I were pretty consistent throughout that it was England did everything right. Gareth Southgate did everything right in the way he handled that. And I was, you can just see, like, England fans could trick themselves into wanting to think a certain thing, but ultimately they are who they are. Negativity returned very quickly. And then they go up in this game against Colombia, and it seems like all is right with the world and they're happy. And then, no, the script. We have to follow the script. Yerry Mina in stoppage time. And we all know where we're headed. We all know that this is going to penalties. For Pickford to make the save and then for Eric Dier to convert the penalty and undo all that history, I think it was the moment. I'm not trying to sound sappy when I say this. Honestly, I really think that that penalty, more so than anything else that happened in this tournament, was the moment that an entire country, a football-crazed country, fell back in love with its national team. And for me, that's a pretty cool thing.
I think you stumbled on it perfectly there when you said the divergence of the script, where it completely went off what they'd seen for almost 30 years. That was cathartic.
Yeah.
I mean, you heard it in Chris Waddle's voice, which we played.
Yeah.
It meant so much, because for him, it probably exercised some ghosts. Don't forget, he never got the chance that Stuart Pearce got. Stuart Pearce missed the initial penalty in 1990 against Germany. 6 years later, he converted against Spain, and he converted his penalty against Germany in the semi-final. He never got a chance to rewrite that. Gareth Southgate never got a chance to rewrite that script.
This was kind of him exercising demons as well.
Yeah, it was an entire footballing, a recent history. A third of a century had been just exercised, and it was an amazing catharsis for Albion.
Yeah. Next up, we've got here our favorite moment of the tournament that didn't really have anything to do with soccer.
Yeah, I struggled with this one because the games were so good and the stories were so good, and the enjoyment level and the joy level of each game was so amazing. But for me, it was being in New York City, being regularly in the studio, talking about the games, and then going into the street and actually seeing the listener, seeing the supporter, seeing the fan who was in many states of dishevelment often.
Uh-huh.
For example, after Colombia lost that game to Japan, their opening game to Japan, it was like the yellow zombies wandering around Manhattan who had, because it was an early game, had been drinking, had taken the day off, and you could see everybody was united in watching the World Cup, and the Croatian fans on Sunday morning on the train, the French fans on the subway as well. For me, the moments outside of the football itself was to be in a city where you had such a mix, such a kaleidoscope of colours, and everyone was into it. I know taxi drivers, generally speaking, the world over, have an opinion on everything, but I've never had so much World Cup talk with taxi drivers. You know, like I said, you'd see people in the street, people in bars, were all talking about it.
Yeah, that's a good call by you. I mean, I was at Studio Square, one of the beer gardens in Astoria, for Sweden, Germany. I mean, for the Toni Kroos goal, it was a great scene. It was such a cool thing. And that morning, I was at a Mexican restaurant in Astoria for South Korea, Mexico.
Right.
So you're right. The fan engagement is just like so fun.
It's so cool, and it for that month, it brings us all together. And I don't believe it solves problems, or you know, but it does bring people closer together. It's great to have something like that in common with so many people.
You're absolutely right. Let's see. For mine, I kind of have a couple here. For one, I actually gave this group a man of the match over the course of the tournament, so I figured I'd reiterate it now. How about the Japanese fans staying behind and just like cleaning stadiums?
Yeah, but the Senegalese fans did that too.
That's true.
How about just how great the fans were?
Yeah, that's a great point.
And also, no English violence, no Russian violence.
Yeah, again, other than the incident in the Serbia-Switzerland match.
Right.
I can't think of much else in terms of fan interaction that was negative. Can you?
Not really. I suppose we had the invasion by Pussy Riot on Sunday, but that was they weren't
fans. I don't really consider that.
That was a political stunt.
And then I also had this. Robbie Williams' performance to start the tournament
was fantastic.
But just the middle fingers that he gave, it was just kind of, not that I root for chaos in these things, but like in watching it, you're just kind of like, let's get to the games. That was different. This might be a fun tournament.
Robbie was on it. He was gurning, posing, flexing, and you know what? He did what this tournament did. He played the hits.
Yeah.
There was all the goals in the tournament, there was all the drama. And
the middle fingers, JJ.
I know. I didn't get that.
No, I didn't get it either. It was just
he didn't do it in the middle of Angels.
No, he didn't.
I feel love is dead. I'm flipping you the bird instead. Through it.
How about this question is one that I really like, and I'm very curious to hear your response to it. How about your moment when you realized that this tournament was different?
It's an obvious one. We've already spoken about it. I'll go at it from a different angle. When Yerry Mina equalises against England in the round of 16, you're like, this is going to extra time, and they either lose in extra time or they lose on penalties. This is what I've been weaned on as a lad. English disappointment at major tournaments. But no. No. They did something that was crazy.
The eyes of Bakker. And Carlos Bakker.
Well, Pickford did his homework. 20 years on from penalty disaster against another South American team, Argentina, where the manager afterwards, Glenn Hoddle, this is the difference. This sounds crazy. 20 years isn't that long of a time. Glenn Hoddle said penalties were a lottery then. Glenn Hoddle didn't believe you could recreate the atmosphere or the circumstances that a player goes through for a penalty kick competition, so don't even bother trying. Don't even train. He did bring a faith healer, though.
Yeah.
Right.
Seems inconsistent.
It seems very inconsistent. This time round, Pickford did his homework, had written down the side that was preferred by each penalty taker on the bottle. Imagine. And it worked. It came off. They won. Henderson missed that penalty. I thought we were still on script. But no, no, no. A plucky young lad from the northwest of, or northeast of England decided no. And a man from Spurs decided no. And that's the moment when you go, oh, this tournament is different. I've never seen this before. No one has.
My moment when I realized that this tournament was different occurred a little bit before that. It was the final day of group play for Group B. It was one of those moments where I work in an office with some people who like soccer, some who hate it, and some who are just kind of totally indifferent to it. But this moment was one where it was really the first true moment I felt of the tournament where everyone was engaged and on the edge of their seat. Let me take you back to it, if you'll indulge me. Final day of Group B play. In Kaliningrad, Isco scored for Spain to level things with Morocco, while in Saransk, Ricardo Quaresma had that incredible strike for Portugal and had them narrowly in front of Iran. Heading into each of these matches, 80th minutes, Portugal were top of the group, Spain sat in second. Then things happened. 81st minute in Kaliningrad, Morocco scores and Spain's hopes of going through no longer rest in their own hands.
It's Al Fajar with the corner. First corner for Morocco.
Now, right around the same time as that, VAR is taking a look at whether or not Cristiano Ronaldo should receive a red card for a blow to the face of Morteza Porlaganji. After a long delay, the ref shows just a yellow. Then in the 89th minute, Cedric Soares appears to handle the ball in the box. The ref didn't see it, but VAR intervenes and demands they have a look. While the review is taking place at the Mordovia Arena, Iago Aspas crucially does this for Spain.
Aspas, go! Or is it offside?
That's right. The flag goes up, so no goal for Spain. This roller coaster of emotion continues, or maybe not. VAR intervenes once again. So now both matches are simultaneously in the midst of critical replay reviews that could have massive impacts in both arenas. Then the referee emerges in Kaliningrad. Aspas is ruled onside. The goal counts. Spain are once again safe. Almost simultaneously, the ref emerges in the other game and grants the penalty to Iran. They score to go level with Portugal. So with several minutes of stoppage time still to play, one more goal for Iran would knock Portugal out. Or if Morocco could get another, it could be Spain who are on the fence. Deep into stoppage time, a chance falls to Iran's Mehdi Taremi, but he can only find the side netting.
Portugal have never been able to relax tonight. It's on by Azmoun, and Portugal look in trouble again. Is this the moment? Rui Patricio's off his line, and it's into the side netting on the far side of their ground.
Finally, the whistles blow in both venues. This breathless sprint to the finish ends with Spain winning the group, Portugal finishing second, Iran just outside in third. It was about as gripping of a 20-minute period that I think this sport or any sport could provide. And like I told you, it brought everybody together, whether you could name every guy on the field, whether you could name not a single guy on the field of both games. Everyone was invested. Everyone was engaged. It was really, it was a truly fun, thrilling moment to watch those games play out simultaneously.
In a group that we thought would have been easily wound up at that point. And Taremi's miss.
Yeah.
Oh.
The ball just fell to him. I mean, it took like a weird bounce. It was a long ball, awkward header. Next thing you know, it's right there for him.
He's got to hit the target.
Yeah. Yep.
He saw the bright lights and just shanked it.
Could have been it. So there you go. How about this? Your disappointment of the tournament.
If I'm going to pick Brazil right on the eve of the tournament to win the whole thing and for them to be that disappointing, and I don't care that they got to the quarterfinal, which is, you know, acceptable for most countries. They never really got going. If you look at their group play, the first game, the draw with Switzerland, they had a 20-minute period at the start where we're all blown away. And then they stopped. And then, I suppose, afterwards, the Costa Rica game, they didn't score two goals.
It took till stoppage time.
Serbian game, if it wasn't for a crazy bit of defending, and I suppose, look, they won it, but they never convinced. They even had their moments where they were lackadaisical against Mexico. They just weren't good. And in Neymar, they had a guy who was half fit going into the tournament and who didn't bring the attitude that was going to be needed. And it all just went a bit flat for them. And none of the things I expected from this Brazilian team happened. They were just so disappointing. And the idea from qualification, when you think of their qualification, I always go back to that performance in November 16 against Argentina where they ripped them apart. And I was one of the people to say, Brazil are back. Well, they weren't.
We thought they were. I mean, they came into the tournament as lead favourites for a reason. No one was wrong to think it.
But that was just so disappointing.
They fell a little bit short of expectation. Look, I mean, it's a game of inches. A couple things happened in the Belgium game, and who knows? I mean, they were going for it at the end, obviously.
It was, but me and you identified before the game, this is where they can have some joy. I told people, I don't think Marcelo should play because X and Y. And they play him, and Roberto Martinez makes it like, there was no great kind of strategy about it. They said, we're going to attack that side. And they ripped them open. It just felt too easy.
My disappointment of the tournament, I went a little bit in a slightly different direction. Didn't really choose a team. I kind of went with a situation. James Rodriguez and Edinson Cavani. And I don't mean their performances. I mean the fact that they got hurt. Cavani was coming off a spectacular two-goal performance against Ronaldo's Portugal. Now he's getting ready to face France, the nation of his club side, PSG. He's clicking. His partnership with Suarez is clicking. They're defending well. I mean, they looked like a clear dark horse at that point. Who knows how it might have changed? I mean, France go on and win the World Cup. I'm not going to say that Uruguay definitely would have won. But
Uruguay were growing into the tournament at a rate that was at least similar to what Croatia was doing.
Absolutely. But then disaster strikes. The calf tightens up. Cavani limps off against Portugal. And Uruguay never recover. And at 31 years old, who knows if his World Cup dream has maybe come to an end. Meanwhile, it's the calf of another prominent South American in James that submarined Colombia's World Cup chances. And I mean, look, in a cameo appearance in this tournament from a grander point of view, he provided us with some moments of brilliance. I mean,
He'll still make the highlight reel, even though he only really played one full 90 minutes.
I didn't put pass of the tournament on here, and Mbappe's little flick to Giroud almost got on, but for me, it's still James's ball that he played right into the path of Cuadrado against Poland. He had two assists in that game against Poland, but his body betrayed him at the worst possible moment. Wasn't even fit enough for a bench role against England. 4 years ago, for them, it was Falcao. Now it's James. It's just, regardless of who you're rooting for, I think one thing that we all want to see are the best players playing on the biggest stage. You know, these guys were playing brilliantly when we saw them, but were taken out of the tournament at the worst possible moments, not for cards or anything like that, but because of injuries. And it's a shame. So that was my disappointment of the tournament. And with disappointments, the other side of that is the surprise of the tournament. Can I go first here real quick?
Yeah, I've taken liberties with the word surprise.
Yeah, my surprise is actually a negative surprise.
Same as that.
That is Germany.
Yep.
Oh, you went the same.
I mean, it was the most surprising thing.
Yeah, I mean, after Toni Kroos did that to Sweden, like it just seemed unthinkable to me that already eliminated South Korea would spoil the German party, but a disastrous 90 minutes for them ushered them right out of the tournament. Two losses in three games. Here are how those losses sounded.
Chicharito dropped it back. Give and go. Chicharito from Guardado. Here he comes. Hernandez leads it. Lozano cutting, looking, shooting. Lozano! Goal! Mexico lead!
legs. It's an empty net to shoot at. It's going to be a long run, whether off that ball or Son Heung-min can get there. Germany are out of the World Cup.
Oof. When they got that late winner against Sweden, you thought they're going to do what classic Germany have done. Maybe not this team, but classic Germany have done, and they're going to grind their way to the semi-final.
What's your favorite cliche?
Oh,
I wouldn't count out the Germans.
Oh yeah, it's a classic one of the World Cup. Even when they're eliminated, we used to say a joke down the pub at home. We'd say, "Wouldn't rule out the Germans." Yeah. Also, Gary Lineker's. Football is a game, 11 men versus 11. They chase the ball around for 90 minutes, and at the end, the Germans win. you just get used to these moments. And I know sometimes in the past, Euro 2000, they didn't make it out of the group. But for the most part, they do. And for them to finish bottom of that group in such fashion was just crazy.
Yep. Here we go. The match of the tournament. I believe you and I are in lockstep on this one.
Yeah. Here's a nice stat to go into it.
Yeah.
In their match against Japan, Belgium became the first team to come from 2+ goals down to win a World Cup knockout round match within 90 minutes since Portugal beat North Korea 5-3 in the 1966 quarterfinal. This is not regular to come back from 2-0 down.
The audio, of course, courtesy of Fox Sports.
Shibasaki's pass! Horiguchi shooting! On the ball, left it off. Shot taken. Second goal for Japan. Anyway, 2-0. Still anyone's ball for Tongan in the air. Plays it back post for Tongan. Belgium are back in. In the Zor, spinning, plays it across. Header. Goal. It's tied at 2. Fellaini.
Pulled up to the middle. Courtois grabs it in traffic. Looks up, rolls it ahead. De Bruyne is on the move.
Good numbers here.
De Bruyne leads it to the right side. Lukaku makes the run. Lukaku lets it go. Chadley, go! Belgium leads. Chadley.
What a game. So thrilling.
It was just brilliant.
The final goal, the drama of the corner straight into the immediate build-up for the winning goal for Chadley. Just watching that breakout develop. Man.
But the feeling I had was so strange at 2-0 up. When Inouye scored that goal, it was, what world am I in? What kind of tournament is this that Japan, who have just got through, by the way, poor qualification, problems, a team that we didn't give a whole lot of chance to in our group previews. They scraped through on a technicality. What kind of a tournament is this going to be if they're facing Brazil in a quarterfinal? And, stranger things didn't happen. Belgium came back.
Yep. And it's just amazing how close it was. The way we now perceive Belgium, like here we are, what would you say, a week and a half, 2 weeks after that Belgium-Japan match happened. If that happens, you know, all of this talk about golden generation, this and that, and Belgium validating all the hype, it's all out the window.
No, there's
this whole generation of Belgian, this rise of all these Belgian superstars, it's all considered a disaster, a massive failure. But now they come back, they score 3 goals in the second half and beat Japan. They go on and beat Brazil, and the road ends after that.
Lose out narrowly to the champions.
Yeah, and we view Belgium now completely differently, that they validated the hype. Who knows what they'll do with the European championships. Maybe they should be considered one of the favorites right there with France. It's just, it all hangs on like a knife's edge, and this is the greatest example of it.
The difference between glory and inquest is
Seriously. Just
so tight.
And, you know, I was thinking, too, when we did this 4 years ago, our match of the tournament, we also had the same one, I believe, and it was the 7-1. And just thinking about it, yes, that will forever, that scoreline will just be etched in stone forever. No one will ever forget watching Germany and Brazil. But isn't this more fun to you?
This
kind of late, you know, wild drama. I think, I don't know, I'd kind of rather a tournament be defined by a match like that rather than just an embarrassing beatdown.
I remember a large portion of that podcast was analyzing tears in the stand and tears on the field. Yeah. Nobody wants that.
No, you're totally right. Last but not least, JJ, this is probably where we get sappy. The thing about this tournament that you want to make sure people never forget.
Mine isn't sappy at all.
Oh.
Mine is very, very cold and clinical, but with a ray of hope at the end. I'm going to talk about England. I'm going to use England as the, the skeleton to put this together. So England scored 9 goals from set pieces at the 2018 World Cup, the most by a team in a single World Cup tournament since 66, when they won it. They did their homework on penalties and studied the opposition against Colombia. They conceded 6 goals in the tournament outside of their third place playoff defeat. I don't want to talk about that because it doesn't count. They had the tournament's top scorer, but of the 32 teams in the tournament, they finished 31st of 32 in shots on target per 90 minutes. 0.9 shots on target per 90. Iran had 0.7. They were the only one below them. Germany was second highest to Brazil, by the way. They went out. What's my point here? England, Uruguay, Sweden, Croatia, and even the eventual winners, France. Organisation at the back, being hard to beat, it can bring you so far. And it's the easiest thing to do. To be organised now in international football, to learn how to stop teams. There's no excuse. You can go as far as you want with a manager who's willing to do the homework. Look at Gareth Southgate. Look at Deschamps. Seriously, look at even Zlatko Dalic. Take the time to do those things. And even if you consider yourself a minnow, you can go very, very far in the tournament. That's why I've kind of changed my tune a little bit on the US men's national team. I don't want to make it about us, but you've got to take inspiration from that tournament and not look at it and say, oh, we don't have an Mbappe. Oh, we don't have a Luka Modric. We don't have an Edson Cavani. We don't have any other of these great players. That's not the point. If you're organised, properly organised, which we have not been and we're not in qualification away to Costa Rica, etc., if you're organised, you can do so much. And I think that is key in our hire for manager if we're talking about being serious at the next World Cup.
Love it. Love the way you brought it home like that. It's beautiful.
I truly enjoyed
that.
People are going to go away and they're going to remember certain things. Weren't Croatia really good? 4.1 million people. Wasn't Mbappe skillful? Yada yada. No, look at it. The teams that did very, very well had this organisation, and it's the easier of the things to do.
JJ, I went in a different direction.
You went sappy.
I did. I certainly did for the thing that I want to make sure people don't forget.
The unity of nations was my favorite thing.
First of all, the fact that you would make fun of that is just sad and troubling to me. But no, that's not what I went with. JJ Hannes Halldorsen, he's 34 years old. He's a part-time film director, plays for a small club in Denmark called Randers. He was also the goalkeeper for Iceland at this World
Cup. That's
right. He was in net when arguably the greatest player in the sport's history stepped up to the spot to give his nation a crucial opening game victory. But instead, this part-time film director from a nation of fewer than 350,000 stopped that penalty. The game ended in a draw. JJ Alireza Barenvand, 25 years old. He was born into a nomadic family in rural Iran. When he was young, his father objected to him pursuing a career in soccer, so he borrowed money from a relative and ran away to Tehran. He was in net on June 25th when another one of the legends of the game stepped up to take a crucial penalty. He also stopped it. JJ, a part-time filmmaker from the smallest nation in the tournament, a keeper who ran away from home and slept outside of a club's training ground with the hopes of being allowed to train. The World Cup puts people like this and takes them and thrusts them into what is essentially the pages of history. I love it. It's one of my favorite things about this tournament. The World Cup is great for lots of reasons, but I don't know if there's any reason greater than this one. That's the thing that I hope people remember. Like you said, we'll all remember Mbappe's performance in France going on to hoist the trophy. But these minnows, you know, human being minnows, stepping up and stopping penalties of Messi and Ronaldo in huge moments, it's what's so cool about this.
Creates amazing stories. You're right.
Now there you go, man.
Now I feel bad about my clinical
Why? I thought yours was great, too.
Thank you.
Don't be like that. That's it. That's our look at this tournament. Now, obviously, we still have a little bit more on this podcast because I did tease this. And so are you ready now for this new look at trivia that I've provided for you?
Yeah, come on, let's do this.
Okay, so what it is, it's called Who Are You?
Oh.
And
the torture never ends.
It's called Who Are You? I'm going to basically describe someone from this tournament.
Okay.
And you're going to have to, we're going to see if you're able to determine who it is. You ready?
Yep.
Yeah. All right, you ready? Here we go.
Yep.
We'll try to do this really quick. If you think you have absolutely no idea, just tap out immediately.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. I'm a defender, JJ, who scored 3 goals at this tournament, more than any other defender.
Yerry Mina.
That's right. 1-for-1. JJ, of all the goalkeepers who played in at least 3 matches, I was the only one to save more than 90% of the shots that I faced. Who am I?
Courtois.
No, it's Kasper Schmeichel. 91.3% save percentage.
Incredible.
In this tournament. Best in the tournament. All right. JJ, I was the only player at this tournament to be yellow carded 3 times.
Ooh. Ah. Torreira, Uruguay.
No, good guess, but no. Sebastian Larsson of Sweden.
Okay.
Let's see. All right. I was fouled 28 times at this World Cup, the most of anyone in this tournament.
It's not Neymar, is it?
No, it's not.
Eden Hazard.
That's right. Very good. All right, we roll along here. JJ, we are the 2 players who converted 3 penalties during this tournament.
Harry Kane.
Yep.
Antoine Griezmann.
That's right. Very good. Next one here. JJ, I became the 13th player to lose a European Cup final and a World Cup final in the same year.
Dejan Lovren.
That is correct.
How dare you?
Of both Croatia snake in the grass. And Liverpool. We continue now.
Hashtag greatest defender ever.
Is that trending? I doubt it. Let's see. I'm a striker who played 546 minutes for my country at this World Cup, but I didn't attempt a single shot on target all tournament. Who am I?
Olivier Giroud.
That's right. You are Olivier Giroud.
Hashtag Stefan Givarsh Light.
JJ, I became the 2nd youngest player ever to score for England at a World Cup. Who am I?
2nd youngest player. Oh, Dele Alli.
That's right.
22 years of age. Michael Owen against Romania in 98 at 18.
Look at you. You are killing it. Killing it. JJ, according to the website whoscored.com and the statistics that they track, nobody had a better individual game at this tournament than I did against Spain. Who am I?
Nobody had a better individual tournament.
Based on their player ratings, this was the highest.
Oh, jeez. Let me see. Against Spain, Artem Zubia.
I think you were thinking too hard. It was Cristiano Ronaldo
for
Portugal.
Oh, for God's sake, a hat-trick. Okay,
and
fair.
Last but not least...
Sorry, yeah. I thought it was going to be someone obscure.
Last but not least, I was the only Arsenal player to score a goal in this tournament.
The only Arsenal player to score... Oh, I'm blanking here now. The only Arsenal player to score... Go on, tell me.
Granit Xhaka.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
With his absolute thunderbolt against Serbia.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right. And there you go.
Both Granit Xhaka and Shaqiri scored in that game.
They sure did.
I mean, it was kind of set up for those kind of eagle celebrations, wasn't it?
That is our trivia. I think you enjoyed that one a little bit more. You seemed more engaged, more into it.
I did. It's amazing how into the tournament you get, and you're like, I'm still locked into World Cup brain.
Yeah, I know. Let's see. Do you have a mailbag?
I have a wonderful mailbag.
Oh, okay.
It's caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. Not just for the World Cup, but for life. And @CEOSoccerPod on the Twitter machine. Mike Messina. Is the Messi-Ronaldo Ballon d'Or era finally over? How much traction do you think the Luka Modric 2018 campaign has picked up? And can Rafael Varane's name be thrown into the mix? Great World Cup coverage. Coverage isn't a word. And keep up the great work from Mike.
That's very nice.
You can answer that one.
Well, I kind of already did.
Yeah, what about Varane?
Well, that's... Boy, I feel like we're in an era where it's going to be really difficult for a defender to win an award like
that. Yeah, and
that.
It's wrong. The Defenders Union should start going to town.
It might be wrong, but it's kind of like in the NFL, where, like, you know, the Heisman Trophy winner in college football is pretty much always
a guy
who scores touchdowns. Like, you're not going to – I think what one defensive player ever in Charles Woodson won the Heisman, and that's because he also played receiver sometimes.
Look at the PFA Player of the Year. It's been all attackers with, like, N'Golo Kanté sprinkled in there and John Terry ages ago.
Yeah. I'm not saying Varane's not deserving of a thought to it, but – I'd be really, really surprised if that happened. But your idea of Modric, look, I'm on board. I mean, let's see how their years continue.
Yeah.
But it certainly warrants some thought.
Raul Selly, love your show. You guys are hilarious. Thank you. I look forward to every episode. Keep up the great work. We shall. What's more painful after such a great World Cup? Talking about transfer rumors until the new seasons begin in Europe's top leagues, or watching MLS. That is.
Oh, don't do that.
That's mean. I've actually got back into MLS. I'm enjoying it very much.
that was
talking
mean.
About transfer rumors is tough.
Yeah, that's definitely the answer.
Yeah.
Transfer rumors are tedious under the best of circumstances, definitely. Let alone during a World Cup.
Yeah. Here's another one. Another what's more painful for JJ, the Henry handball, or for Andrew, the U.S. men's national team not qualifying for the 2018 World Cup. You guys are awesome. Love the show. Thank you.
Well, you and I are probably going to be entrenched in our own camps on that.
Yeah, but they're both equally bad. I mean, we both didn't qualify.
U.S. was way worse.
U.S. was worse because it had an embarrassment factor to it.
Certainly did.
Whereas Ireland played exceptionally well that night. And I just felt numb for weeks afterwards. I was like, what the hell happened?
Yeah.
Hayden Boytink. Just wanted to say great work covering the World Cup and let you know that while some people listen to music while working out, I prefer some quality banter. Hashtag bants. Which is one of the reasons you guys have become hands down my favourite podcast over this past year. I just wanted to bring up a thought that came to mind while watching the final. Now, I know this isn't likely to be remembered as a good World Cup for Argentina. However, the only matches they lost this tournament were to Croatia and France. Should this change... Yeah, but they drew with Iceland.
About that is very interesting.
This is what we call the spin zone.
Yeah.
Should this change how their World Cup is viewed at all? This is also the second tournament in a row where Messi has been eliminated by the eventual champions. I would love to hear both of your thoughts on this. Keep up the great work, you two, and come on, you Spurs. Cheers from your friends north of the border in Canada.
I'll tell you what. I don't know necessarily that I agree, but I enjoy someone like that who just... like is trying to see it in a way that no one else chooses to see it.
Yeah.
But like makes some sense.
Yeah. But they're wrong.
Oh.
No, I can't spin it like that. I really can't.
Well, it's the only reason that I can't spin it like that is because if they had played well and that happened, then I think I'd be a little more forgiving.
If there was good football. Like for example, I'll remember Senegal for playing good football. They didn't make it out of the group.
Yeah.
Serbia as well, but
I don't think you can really say that about what Argentina did.
I mean,
did
even in the game against Nigeria that they won, it was hardly by design. It was a brilliant cross that happened to find a defender who had wandered up there because he wanted to atone for a mistake.
And yet this is the same team that had a 2-1 lead in the 63rd minute against France.
Right.
And then Mbappe scored two and... Well, no, I'm sorry. It was tied 2-2 in the 63rd. Mbappe scored in the 64th.
No, Argentina did lead.
They led in the second half.
It wasn't very long lead.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Look, you can choose to spin it like that, definitely. Most people won't, though. Erica Downing. Although the 2006 World Cup was the first that I remember watching, the 2010 World Cup changed my life. Mm. No, for real. I picked Spain to win beforehand as I knew they had a ton of star power. I followed them throughout the tournament. I didn't just follow them, but I watched every match I possibly could. I found soccer or football and never looked back finding a home with Spurs and Real Madrid, even though I know old English Andy hates people with two teams. Spain winning not only ignited my love of the sport, but it reignited my love for the Spanish language. I had quit it in high school, but took it up again in college, eventually studying abroad and discovering how much I love the country. Flash forward 8 years, and I spent 3 years in Spain in total. In Madrid, I live a 20-minute walk from the Bernabeu, so I had the privilege to see their first three Champions League games there. I even had the opportunity to see Madrid win the Champions League in Kiev. Sorry, JJ. That's okay. My hope is that someone was inspired by this World Cup in the way that I was. Hopefully some people will find their way to cheering on a team. I suggest Spurs and Madrid, of course. Maybe some will find a love for a country whose play they fell in love with. This shows that the World Cup is more than just a game, but affects people globally in many different ways. I love the show, especially your hour-long plus episodes. Keep on podding. And that was from Erica Downing.
JJ, I'm going to be honest.
Thank you, Erica.
We've read a lot of emails on this show. That might be my favorite one.
Really?
I thought that was tremendous.
It is great.
That is really, really cool.
That's how, you know, when people
to be
say,
moved by a sport in a way to not only adopt the language, but then
move
go
there.
And move there.
It's incredible. It really
I
is.
I love that. That was awesome.
I mean, that is just, people say a lot of things. Oh, I'm passionate. I'm a diehard this. I'm a diehard that. That's,
prove it.
Prove it. Move there. Yeah. Reignite your love for the language. Live there. Live 20 minutes from the Bernabeu. It's incredible. Yeah. We've had some wild emails of late. Like really amazing emails.
Yeah. People are on their game.
They are on their game. From Hurricane Maria to this.
Yeah.
Nuts.
That is awesome stuff. That's it?
That's it. That's the mailbag. I thought it was a good one.
That was. Really, really enjoyed that. Before we get out, I guess we'll kind of turn the page now and start.
Oh, we love doing that.
Yeah, I should bring back that old USA intro. Turn the page from a World Cup standpoint, start looking ahead to the future. I just have a couple questions here. I don't have a ton to say about these, but I figure they do warrant some sort of mention. Moving forward, do you have to look at France now as, like, we came into this thinking there was Brazil, Germany. I suppose I would put France in there, but it seemed like Brazil and Germany were the top two, then France, and then a gap. Like, has France now, in doing this, vaulted to the top of that list?
Definitely. I feel like this is a team that has won a tournament in a certain style. Maybe I didn't enjoy it, but they've showcased exactly what they have. Look at Varane and Umtiti. Look at Pavard and Hernandez. And Pavard and Hernandez might not be their best two fullbacks.
That's the thing. They were using their substitute fullbacks.
Right. They have N'Golo Kante and Paul Pogba. They have Griezmann. They have Blaise Matuidi.
You haven't even said the name yet.
No, who am I supposed to say?
Kylian Mbappe.
I know, but I mean, he's 19.
Yeah. They were the second.
Like, how can they not? And if you take the time, which you should, make an 11 of those who were either on the bench or didn't travel. Just
you
awesome.
You can do it.
It's fantastic. And I will say this, they won that tournament with the handbrake on.
Well, that's the thing. They're the second youngest team at the tournament, which should be frightening to their rivals. And you said it. Like, they just won a World Cup. They came from the more difficult side of the bracket, unquestionably, and they did it all without really ever showing us what they were maybe truly capable of. That is scary to me.
It's even more scary if, for example, Deschamps lets them off the leash, even a scintilla, going into European Championships. France are clearly the best team in the world. There's no question about that, and no amount of belly aching for me about style of play or anything changes that.
I'm with you. JJ, was there a particular country in this tournament looking forward now to the future whose profile maybe went up a notch in your mind?
No, not really. I don't think so.
Can I give you one?
Because the teams I consider to be, actually, if anything, some teams were diminished.
Okay. Well, yeah.
But I didn't feel
that.
Like, for as good as Senegal, Serbia were, for as gutsy as Peru were at times, I mean, none of them got out of the group. Those that got out of the group were vanquished then in terms of, like, look at Brazil. They didn't go up a notch in my mind. Belgium or Belgium?
That was who I said.
Yeah, see, I don't agree with that.
Well, okay, that's fair. Here's why I said it. All I can do is think about my perception of things. Before the tournament started, I was at a bar down the Jersey Shore, and I was talking to this guy, and he's a big gambler, and he wanted to know, he's like, I know all the ones with crappy odds, but give me somebody whose odds are maybe a little bit more long shot. And I was like, I said, well, I guess Belgium, but I was like, dark horses don't, I said, you can pick them, but you're throwing your money away. Dark horses don't win at tournaments like this. It just, I've never seen it happen. And so I think about coming from that angle before the tournament started. And now I think about what I saw from them over the course of this tournament. And now I think about what I'll say to somebody before the next major tournament. And to me now, in 2 years' time at the European Championships, Belgium showed me enough that they are, like, I will not say to someone, well, they're a dark horse. You can pick them because of the odds, but they're not going to win. If you want to pick Belgium to win the European Championships, France will still be my pick, but I'm not looking at anybody with cross eyes if they tell me I'm going to go with Belgium. Like, they are there. They have guys who will still be in deep in their prime. Hazard is 27. Lukaku's only 25.
Right.
De Bruyne is 27. Meunier, who was kind of like a bit of a breakout performer for them, he's only 26. Tielemans is only 21. You know, they have arrived. And I think if you want to go into the next major tournament in Europe and make them your pick, you're not crazy for doing it. And I don't know that that's something that I would have said before this tournament. So that is why they've gone up a notch in my mind.
Yeah, I just couldn't answer that one, really. I Belgium are exactly who I thought they were, and I think they're going to be at the business end in 2 years' time as well. Okay. Because I think they're that good.
What about a player from this tournament who kind of piqued your interest moving forward?
Lucas Torreira, who Arsenal have signed, really. We had question marks over that Uruguay midfield, and I think they were more than answered. And I think he was key to that. So I'm going to be interesting to see, does he give that defensive stability to Arsenal? And we're going to get a great chance to see him over the coming season, and we're going to find out a lot about him in club play, because, let's be honest, we didn't see a whole lot of him when he was at Sampdoria. That's one that piques my interest. There's a ton of older players on Japan that just blew me away. I honestly thought Kagawa's performance against Belgium, I'd forgotten about Kagawa. Not forgotten, but I'd kind of consigned him to the, you know what, didn't quite make it in the Premier League. He was wonderful. And I'm wondering, will someone else take a punt on him going forward in the future? That's someone who came across to me. A lot of the players, the big stars, delivered, the ones we know about. Pavard interests me hugely. Going forward to see, can he take the next step up to the top level? But those will be my ones.
Yeah, I went with Sergej Milinkovic-Savic of Serbia.
Yeah, I don't know.
Plays for Lazio. Rumors right now of a move to Chelsea. I don't know, for a player of his size, he's like 6'4". I found him to be just graceful in a way that I wouldn't have thought like him would be. I enjoyed watching
him. Did he not let you down against Brazil a little bit?
Maybe. Honestly,
maybe being too hard.
I enjoyed watching him in this tournament. Like, he was somebody when he had the ball. I was intrigued. Last two quickly. Is there a nation who performed well at this tournament, but you maybe still have questions about them moving forward?
Yeah, England.
Okay,
you can't deny they performed well. They exceeded expectations by getting to a semi-final. The path is almost irrelevant. It's not irrelevant. It's very relevant. But I'm just going to not beat on the drum that I've already been on for a long time about Sweden being disappointing, Colombia being shorn of their best player. They got to a semi-final. But like I've said consistently, I don't think the major questions have still been answered about this team. I think they're solid at the back, which I talked about. Organisation is key. Mm-hmm. They are that. Andrew, they don't have a midfield that can compare to any of the top sides. They don't. And if that remains the case, I don't see how they are going to eat. I don't see how they'll even equal what they did.
You're right. It's easy to envision them getting overrun, specifically in that midfield. I feel good about their defense. Even though Harry Kane was off in this tournament, still won the Golden Boot. Great player. But you're right. The midfield is where there are some questions. I said Russia. They were the story of this tournament, arguably, but I still don't know like how good they really are.
But again, what are we talking about? Two banks of four, very organized, don't give up many
incredibly
goals.
Incredibly organized.
It goes to show you, man, we can win a World Cup.
Last but not least, JJ, did this World Cup reshape the way you feel at all about international football?
Not really.
I agree. I don't have much to say about that. Look, I mean, Ireland, the U.S., that's kind of the game in our countries. Like, we obviously MLS is a great league. I'll let you speak for the League of Ireland.
Well, it's not big, and it's not. MLS is a bit like the Irish League. We watch other leagues.
Yeah, but like the Irish national team, the U.S. men's national team, that is the game for us.
No, so, it is. It's,
yeah, I was already in on all of this. But maybe I won't be quite so snarky when we have international breaks early in the Premier League season.
Don't forget this Nations Cup's coming up.
You're right.
Friendlies be gone.
Hey, this was so much fun. Honestly, all throughout this last month, plus really 2 months getting everybody ready with the group previews. Like we mentioned during the mailbag, you guys in particular have been so much fun to interact with on Twitter, email. it's been awesome.
Those iTunes reviews as well, they've been coming thick and fast. Keep them coming. We really appreciate them. It's been joyous. Yeah. It has been great. Stick with us. We only get better. Do we?
You can all be the judge. But and truthfully, man, it was so much fun doing this with you as well. We spent a lot of hours together in the previews and all the way through the tournament. And it was honestly, it was a blast. I hope that comes through when we do this. I think it does. And it is genuine. We love doing this show. And it's really never been more fun than it has been over the last month. But like JJ says, the soccer never stops. We got another podcast out for you. They're just going to keep on keeping on. Hey, to you I say,
take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.